College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and a break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. On this edition of the College Hoops Today podcast, we will break down the SEC conference from soup to nuts. Later in the show, we will be joined by Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl, whose Tigers are currently ranked number one, according to multiple recruiting services, in terms of recruiting classes for the class of 2017. We want you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes, and also check us out on Facebook on the College Hoops Today fan page. Give us a like. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And today's show is brought to you by Harry's. Stop compromising on your shave and get started with Harry's today. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you've settled for a low price but low quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Good shave, good price. It's simple. Get the best of both with Harry's. Harry's starter set is a great option. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shaving cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code HOOPS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman set. That's HARRYS.com. Enter code HOOPS at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. Now that we've got you set up for all your shaving needs, let's jump into SEC basketball, a conference right now that is in about as critical a state as I can remember in terms of a football league in college basketball. Because right now, when you look at the SEC, you have the Kentucky Wildcats, and Kentucky is to the SEC what Tom Hanks was to the movie Castaway, because the Wildcats are on an island by themselves. Kentucky has no peer in this conference, and it's not even close, because for so long, we would see every year Kentucky and Florida be far and away the two best teams in the SEC and two of the better teams in the country. But when Billy Donovan made the decision to go to the NBA and coach the Oklahoma City Thunder, we saw a changing of the guard. Who is the second best team in the SEC? How many bids will the SEC have in the 2017 NCAA tournament? If you really want to split the atom, if you really want to be direct and hit somebody right between the eyes, you have to give the facts. Kentucky and Texas A&M were two solid teams last year. Okay? Two solid teams that advanced to the NCAA tournament. A&M was in the Sweet 16. But the SEC, a league with major football, a power conference, only had three teams in the field of 68. Kentucky, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt. And the Commodores, everybody remembers, lost by 20 points in the first four to Wichita State, and it didn't even feel that close. And for years, I would ask myself, when I would wake up in the morning, who is the third best team in the SEC? Because I knew Kentucky and Florida were 1 and 2 in some order. Now, I wake up and I say, who is the second best team in the SEC? And I think there's two programs right now, Auburn and Mississippi State, that look like they're a year away from being NCAA tournament contenders. Because Bruce Pearl, who we're going to be joined by shortly, and Ben Hallen, the head coach of Mississippi State, have done a tremendous job augmenting the talent base in their respective programs. But now, as you look at the rest of the SEC, it's a hodgepodge, and there is no way to forecast who is going to be the second team in the NCAA tournament next year after Kentucky. The SEC's at a crossroads, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. Now, one program that looks on the uptick is the Auburn Tigers. Bruce Pearl has had two losing seasons in his career as a head coach. They were his first 2 years at Auburn. We talk about that, plus Auburn's vaunted recruiting efforts. Bruce Pearl joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next.
Oh.
Auburn currently has the number one ranked recruiting class according to multiple recruiting outlets for the class of 2017. And the head coach of the Tigers is on the line right now. He is Bruce Pearl. And what would you say is the state of Auburn basketball right now entering your third year? Are you happy with where it is, or would you have liked to have seen things obviously tread in a different light?
Well, John, I'm pleased with where we're at right now because we've got a very strong foundation built. We've been able to put a couple of recruiting classes back-to-back, and we'll see that second strong recruiting class come in this year with Jared Hopper, Mustafa Heron, Anthony McLemore. But I've got seven or eight freshmen, sophomores, in my top probably 11 players. And, that really bodes well. And that's not even including the 2017 class that's ranked number one to this point. So the foundation's laid, which bodes well for the future. And then the progress that we've made off the floor by selling out Auburn Arena, by winning some games in the SEC tournament, which hasn't happened in like 30 years, beating Kentucky for the first time in 18 tries a year ago. We've won enough just to get people excited, and with these recruiting classes in, we've given them some hope.
How would you compare the recruiting classes you have now at Auburn to the strong recruiting classes you had out of the gate at Tennessee?
Well, the great class I had at Tennessee was a class with Ramar Smith and Duke Cruz and Wayne Chisholm, Josh Tabb, Brian Williams. That was a very strong class that carried me, through many years of my career at Tennessee. But I do believe, John, that the kind of roster that we can have next year could be as talented as my Tennessee rosters. And so, that's going to kind of come back on me, is what we're doing now in coaching 5 or 6 years later, working as well as what we were doing, years ago when I was a Tennessee Vol. Part of the challenge has been the rules have changed a little bit. We love the shot clock because we've always played fast, but I think it's getting harder and harder to extend defensively because of the way they call hand-checking and the way they call things out of the perimeter. But I am, now that I have depth, going to go back to the way I played at Tennessee, a lot faster and a lot more furious.
You mentioned how the game has changed and coaches change over time too. What's the biggest difference in Bruce Pearl now entering his third year at Auburn than maybe there was, during the latter part of his years at Tennessee as a head coach?
I'd say obviously you get a little older, maybe a little wiser, and you might get a little bit more patient with players. I haven't lost an ounce of energy. My passion is still the same. I work just as hard. I feel like maybe as I've gotten older, this coaching thing is more of a ministry than it is just a job you have to win at to keep your job. And I still want to win championships, but at the same time, we've graduated 11 guys in the going on 3 years I've been here at Auburn. We've had great success with our APR. That stuff makes a difference, for me. And it always did. But I do think sometimes that stuff can define you more than just winning championships. I've always won, and so I'm not worried about that. We'll win at Auburn. But I do really appreciate the other aspects of getting back into coaching. I miss making sure those kids got their degrees.
You just told me the things that are different about you as a coach. What's different about you as a man after you sat out those 2 years after the way things ended at Tennessee?
Well, not much. I think the very difficult part about being out of coaching for a few years, and particularly losing my job at Tennessee, is that as a coach and a teacher, we are held and should be held to a higher standard. And so as a teacher and a coach, and yes, as a role model, when you screw up, you let a lot of people down, not just your family, but but the people that you're trying to teach and train, so on and so forth. God knows I'm a sinner like the rest of them, and far from perfect. But that's probably been the toughest pill to swallow. But God's got me where He wants me right now, and that's back in coaching and back in teaching. And John, at a place that is all about family. I tell you, this Auburn family thing is for real. It's different than any place I've ever been. And you know what? This country needs more places like Auburn University if we're going to ever save this world from itself. We're producing good men and good women. It's a great fit for me and for my family.
Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. You know, one thing I'm curious about is, how has your perception of the media changed? Because you spent some time sitting behind a microphone, breaking down other teams. How is your perception and maybe appreciation for the media different after you sat in the booth for a couple of years and sat in the studio?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I know the guys have got to work really hard, and there's a lot of travel, and there's a lot of preparation and studies. I've always had great respect for the media, and I continue to. The only thing that I learned was a little bit different is, yes, there is spin, and things are spun. And you look at, I think the powers that be will look at a certain year and say, okay, this is going to be the year of the one and done, or this is going to be the year of the senior, or this is going to be the year of this and that. And so I think sometimes they go into a season and they kind of decide what it's supposed to look like, you know, And so that would be the only thing that I really learned that I didn't know prior to being in the media.
Well, you know, you're back at Auburn. There's a buzz. There's a palpable buzz about Auburn basketball. You've, you know, got a great recruiting class on the way. But there's not a buzz right now about the Southeastern Conference. And you were in the league at Tennessee where there was three teams that had a number next to their name the entire year, Kentucky, Florida, and Tennessee. As you've seen this whole league evolve over the last 5 to 7 years, what has happened to SEC basketball?
Well, you've made a great point, John. I think you've got your finger on it. You're all over it. I've read your stuff. You know, when I was at Tennessee, there were three teams that were in the top 20 every year, Tennessee, Florida, and Kentucky. And what that did was, it just from a pure mathematical standpoint, it brought the rest of the league up. So if you're Georgia or if you're Vanderbilt and you're playing in the SEC East with those other three programs and you're playing those teams six times, it's like living in the ACC or the Big East, where you get a chance to play really highly ranked teams multiple times. And if you can win one of them, or maybe even two of them, goodness gracious, now all of a sudden you can win yourself in the tournament. Whereas last year in the SEC, in the last few years, really Kentucky, and then maybe either, say, Texas A&M here or there, or, you know, you pick the third team, had a number next to its name that meant something. And so just mathematically, we are so far behind three or four other major conferences until we get some separation between the best teams in our league and the teams that are in the middle of the pack. But the problem with that, John, is I don't see that happening right away, because the teams in the middle and at the bottom of our league are recruiting better. They've hired new coaches. And I wouldn't like to sit there and look ahead of time and figure out who's supposed to be who in the zoo in the SEC. You get past Kentucky, Texas A&M, and Florida this year, maybe Georgia with their star power, and I'm not so sure who's going to finish fourth or fifth or sixth. It's an absolutely wide-open league.
Well, you obviously have made some waves with your recruiting in terms of what we can expect in the future. If you had to pick one program moving forward that can be an anchor along with a Kentucky or potentially an Auburn at the top of the SEC, who is it?
Well, it's me. I mean, it's going to be Auburn. I mean, that's what I do.
Other than you.
You know what, John? I don't know. I can't predict, you know, who else is going to be there at this point. I mean, I've given you the top four or five, I think, this year, and I don't know that I'm going to be too terribly wrong about that. But I do think that, just stay tuned, because I do think there's a chance that our league, with the new leadership, bringing Mike Trangisi in as an advisor, Dan Liebowitz is a senior associate athletic director, Whitehead is our new supervisor of officials, the coaching hire. Like, you know, I don't know that we're going to go crazy with progress this year. I think we can make a little bit of progress, but I do think in the future, you know, it really looks good. We're going to schedule better. We've got to win in November and December. And I tell you, one of the challenges about winning in November and December is this. In many, many schools, in the Big Ten or the ACC or the Big East, they're done with football. You've got to understand something. In November, the SEC is just getting warmed up. Our best games are the Iron Bowl, Alabama, Auburn. Our best games are Auburn, Georgia. Those are late in the year. And so our, as a result, we get going in basketball. We just don't get going as early, and that's been a real problem, you know, for the SEC. And I just think it's a virtue, by virtue of the fact that our football programs are great and so dominant.
What do you think are realistic goals for Auburn this year?
Postseason, John. Going to be hard with our non-conference schedule because I'm always going to play one of the top, you know, top 10 schedules in the country. This year is no different. We got Oklahoma, we got Purdue, and neutral sites. We're going to go to UConn, you know, Texas Tech. I've got three true road games in non-conference at TCU, at UAB, at UConn. Can we be a postseason team? I think that's a realistic expectation. I really do, because we've got really good young players. Our issue won't be the talent or the depth or even how young we are. Our issue is going to be a little bit thin in the front line. And the second thing is, when I play North Florida in the first game, they're going to have 800 start. You know, they're going to have players that are going to be playing in their 90th game together. You know, 3 years of playing together. And I'll have guys playing in their first game together because we've got, you know, so many new pieces. But I think postseason would be a very realistic expectation for the Auburn Tigers this year.
I was down at Auburn last year in the preseason. You know, we spent some time and watched practice. And the guy that stood out to me after watching practice last fall was Dangell Purifoy. He was not ruled academically eligible to play last year. What is his status and the rest of the status academically-wise and eligibility-wise for next season, you know, in terms of the rest of your roster?
Yeah, John, we're good to go. And, you know, we didn't get Dangell last year. You add him to the class with Bryce Brown and Horace Spencer, and you got another really, really good class. But instead, he'll come in with Jared Harper and Anthony McLemore and Mustafa Heron. You add Dangell Purifoy. You bring a couple of fifth-year transfers and LaRon Smith and Ronnie Johnson. And I'm going to add six new pieces, four of whom are freshmen, to a pretty good roster. So we're good to go, and we're excited about it. The last thing I'll say is this. One of the things about changing the character and the chemistry and the culture of the program, it takes recruiting a player like Mustafa Heron or maybe even Jared Harper that have a work ethic that's at a completely different level. And they were infectious this summer. And because of the way they get in the gym at 6:30 in the morning and live in the gym and just have that different level of discipline training to be pros, it affected some of our other players. Probably none more than Bryce Brown. You know, Bryce Brown was a guy that made more threes as a freshman than any freshman in the history of Auburn basketball, one of the top five in the history of the SEC. Watch for Bryce Brown to also have a big, big year, and part of it is the fact that he's training with guys that want to be pros.
Final thing for me, BP, you know, we saw some glimpses early from T.J. Dunnins last year, but he had a lingering knee issue. Where is he, and do you expect him to be full go when workouts kick back in a couple of weeks?
I sure do, John. He's a very, very productive player. He's healthy. There's another guy I didn't have for almost the entire SEC season. You know, last year we lose Taj Sansabin, you know, for the year before the season even starts. He's my starting point guard, and Dangell's not eligible. We lose Dunnins for most of the SEC, and then I've got to suspend Kareem Canty midway through the SEC season. We lost four of our top five or six players a year ago and survived. Dunnins is a productive player. He's a combo, he should have a terrific year. And between Bryce Brown, Mustafa Heron, and T.J. Dunnins on the wings, I tell you right now, those guys will look eye to eye with anybody in the SEC conference, including Kentucky.
You know, you mentioned Kentucky, and you and John Calipari obviously had some memorable games, both when he was at Memphis and at Kentucky. What has it been like for you to watch him obviously evolve from somebody who was at Memphis and Conference USA to Kentucky? And what do you think's changed about, you know, what he's been able to do?
Just the opportunity, John. Listen, I grew up in Boston. Right? I know that what he did at UMass may go down as one of the top five jobs ever in the history of college basketball. When he was at UMass, they were a Final Four team, and that program was just, it's incredible to think what UMass was back then, you know. And then he goes to Memphis and does everything that you could possibly imagine at Memphis. So why would you be surprised when he finally gets to a place where he has got all those resources? a place like a North Carolina or a Kansas or a Kentucky, or he's in his element. There isn't anybody in the country better at recruiting, at taking talented players and getting them to play hard and unselfishly. He's the best at it. And then obviously because he's had so many guys be able to go pro, it's just a, you know, he walks into a living room and gives a family an opportunity to go to Kentucky. That would be one difficult decision to turn down.
BP, appreciate a couple of minutes. Congrats on your recruiting success. And again, looking forward to covering your team this season. What I hope is a bounce back year for the SEC.
And I know the way we chowed down at the Hound last year. As soon as I could get a couple of W's under my belt, John Rothstein will be back on campus to help me celebrate.
That was a good dessert spread. What did we have there? The bread pudding? That was tremendous.
We had everything, John. Absolutely everything.
All right, BP, have a good rest of the summer. I'll talk to you.
All right, man. War Eagle, take care.
I'd like to thank Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want you to subscribe to us on iTunes and also check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Now we will continue with our SEC offseason breakdown, and we start with power rankings.
John's SEC Power Rankings.
Surprise, surprise, Kentucky is at number one, Florida at number two. Again, Mike White has never been to the NCAA tournament as a head coach. He should have an excellent chance next year. Texas A&M 3, despite the fact that they lost four key pieces in Anthony Collins, Alex Caruso, Jalen Jones, and Daniel House. Georgia's at 4 with two All-League players and J.J. Frazier and Yonte Maton. Ole Miss at 5, a team built on transfers. Arkansas 6, South Carolina 7, Auburn 8, Mississippi State 9, led by that vaunted recruiting class. Bulldogs, though, look like they are a year away. Alabama 10, LSU 11, Vanderbilt 12, Tennessee 13, Missouri 14. Now let's look at the best players in the SEC.
John's SEC preseason first team.
De'Aaron Fox, the freshman point guard for Kentucky, getting a spot. J.J. Frazier from Georgia. Kevon Allen, the talented scoring wing from Florida, also makes the cut. Bam Adebayo, the freshman power forward from Kentucky. And Tyler Davis from Texas A&M rounding out the SEC preseason first team. Tyler Davis was sensational last year as a first-year big for the Aggies. Time now for the SEC preseason player of the year.
John's SEC preseason player of the year.
I'm going to roll the dice here and go with Bam Adebayo from Kentucky, the player in this league that looks like he has the highest potential to be drafted somewhere next year in the lottery. Unbelievable body, unbelievable bounce and burst. Bam Adebayo, my SEC preseason player of the year. And Kentucky is obviously the team that people are keying on. What about a sleeper next year in the Southeastern Conference?
John's SEC sleeper.
I'm going to go to Bud Walton Arena, and I'm going to go with the Arkansas Razorbacks. Now, last year was not a vintage Mike Anderson year. 16-16 overall, 9-9 in the league. But again, two All-League players return for Arkansas in Dusty Hannes and Moses Kingsley. Anton Beard is also back, and Arkansas went to the junior college ranks to add some pretty impactful reserves. So I think Arkansas, thanks to that home court advantage and the returning experience of Hannes and Kingsley, is the team that could sneak up on people this year in the SEC. How about some first-year players in the league to keep an eye on?
John's freshman to watch in the SEC.
We've talked about the Kentucky guys a bunch already. Bam Adebayo and De'Aaron Fox head the list. Malik Monk is also on there. Wenyen Gabriel, Sasha Calais-Jones. Auburn has three guys on this list. Mustafa Haran, Dangel Purifoy, who was academically ineligible last year. Jared Harper, the diminutive point guard with an IQ beyond his years. Braxton Key from Alabama. Robert Williams from Texas A&M. J.J. Caldwell from Texas A&M. And the final four, all from Mississippi State. Lamar Peters, Mario Kegler, Schneider Harrard, and Eli Wright, all for Mississippi State. A note on Mario Kegler. He has not been cleared yet by the NCAA. He is not playing right now during Mississippi State's foreign tour in Italy. Another name to put on the list, Tyson Carter from Mississippi State, had 21 points, including five made threes in the Bulldogs' first game in Italy. Time now to look at the transfer market.
John's transfers to watch in the SEC.
Kenyon Barry from Florida obviously tops this list. Jalen Barford and Darryl Macon, two JUCO imports for Arkansas, who will play major minutes. Two guys from Alabama now, Nick King, the transfer from Memphis, and also Corbin Collins, the immediately eligible transfer from Morehead State. He could be the Crimson Tide's starting point guard. Ronnie Johnson from Auburn. Two guys I want to point out for Ole Miss, Cullen Neal and DeAndre Burnett. DeAndre Burnett is a flat-out bucket getter. Wouldn't shock me if he led the SEC in scoring. J.C. Hampton from Texas A&M and Xavier Stapleton from Mississippi State. This is the guy that has two ACL tears over the last year or so. Ben Howland has told me that Mississippi State hopes to get him back for SEC play. One under-the-radar transfer to keep an eye on, that's Dustin Thomas on Arkansas, was a solid face-up power forward at Colorado. He could give Moses Kingsley more time to operate, more space to operate in the low post. Time now to look at who's going to break out in the SEC.
John's SEC breakout players for next season.
There are 10 on this list. Luke Kornet at Vanderbilt. He should be the alpha dog in Nashville this year. Devin Robinson from Florida. Isaac Humphries from Kentucky. Two guys on Texas A&M who should make major jumps as sophomores. Admon Gilder and DJ Hogue. Eric Holman, another breakout candidate for Mississippi State. Brandon Sampson from LSU. Horace Spencer from Auburn will probably be the Tigers' starting five-man. Derek Ogbede from Georgia. And Chris Silva from South Carolina. Remember, South Carolina had that breakthrough year last season. Didn't make the NCAA tournament, but lost Michael Carrera and two other big guys. So there are minutes available up front for Chris Silva to have an absolute breakout year for Frank Martin. Now, in my opinion, the scary thing right now for the SEC is the fact that you're starting to wonder if this league is getting any respect nationally. And South Carolina, to me, is the perfect example. Win 24 games, go 11-7 in your league, and you don't make the NCAA tournament. There is one known commodity in the SEC moving forward, and that's John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats. After that, everything else is a crapshoot. I'd like to thank Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl for popping on the College Hoops Today podcast. Next week, we will preview the Big 12 from soup to nuts. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.